Thank you. General Scowcroft is the Lieutenant General, retired. He's one of America's foremost and most prominent analysts on foreign policy issues. He's had a distinguished career in and out of government, on the inside, dealing with the challenges and opportunities and also burdens of promoting America's national security interest and key foreign policy objectives across the spectrum, be they strategic, economic, political, commercial, defense, and in the people-to-people private sector relations. He is the founder and president of the Forum for International Policy. This is a nonpartisan, non-governmental organization which provides independent analysis and perspective on major foreign policy issues. He's also president of the Scowcroft Group, an international business advisory firm, and he served as assistant to the president for national security affairs to Presidents Gerald R. Ford and President Nixon as military assistant, but national security affairs advisor also to President George H.W. Bush. And it was particularly during that tenure in the White House that one of the longest wars of the 20th century, namely the Iran-Iraq War, starting in September of 1980 and ending with the ceasefire August 18, 1988. This was on General Scowcroft's watch. And in many people's minds, that was a successful U.S. mobilization and deployment of force. 24 other nations stood with the United States in an internationally concerted action to bring about the ceasefire. There was cooperation with all the members of the United Nations Security Council, with 15 out of 15 members on July the 15th, 1987, passing Resolution 598, the first unanimous resolution in the United Nations Security Council since the Korean War, directly dealing with an issue of war and peace. General Scowcroft was centrally, pivotally involved in helping, one, to bring about an end to the Iran-Iraq War, two, to prevent the Iranian Revolution from spreading to the western side of the Gulf, to Eastern Arabia, and at the same time, part and parcel of the ending of the Cold War with the defeat of the Soviet Union through another internationally concerted action pertaining to Afghanistan. General Scowcroft.
Thank you very much, Dr. Anthony. It's a great pleasure for me to be here with such a distinguished group of speakers and a wonderful audience, and I want to congratulate you on the subject for this year. This is a very critical time, and the title of the conference, Transitioning the White House, is very important. Now, we're supposed to talk about Iran and Iraq. But I want to make a couple of preliminary comments because I think there's some danger in separating the various issues of the region because they tend to spill over on each other in a variety of ways. And what I want to say is just a few words about the Palestinian peace process. I think it is a major source of the problems in the region. It's a major source of anti-Americanism in the region. It's a major rallying point for extremists in the region. And the solution of that problem would make a great contribution to the other issues that beset us in the region. I am personally very disappointed that the efforts of this administration have not produced success. But I think that the day that a new president sits in the White House, the first thing he ought to think about, there are a lot of first things, but one of the very first things is renewing the Palestinian peace process, because it's one of those things that if you're not moving forward, we're moving backwards, and I think that's a real danger. We cannot succeed in that without the direct personal involvement, I don't think, of the President of the United States in a heavy way. A success in this venture, though, would, first of all, change the psychological climate of the region. It would restore the general attitude that the United States is a force for good in the region, a force for progress in the region, not simply in there for its own narrow national aims. It would change the psychological climate another way. It would move Iran from offensive to the defensive, because Iran plays on the Palestinian peace process through Hezbollah, through Hamas. Now, they are organizations that are not wholly dependent on the Palestinian issue, but they get their strength and they feed on the Palestinian issue. So, to me, this is one thing that the President has to focus on. Now, turning to Iraq, if this conference last year had focused on Iraq, it would be gloom and doom. The attitude has changed much, and I think the attitude has changed much because the situation has changed significantly. Progress is being made, but it's a very fragile process, and it's, I think, easily subject to reversal. It has been something of an issue in the presidential campaign, although not so much recently. And to me, what we need to focus on is what we really need in Iraq. And it seems to me what we need in Iraq is a country that is an influence for stability in the region, not for conflict and chaos. And it's getting to that point now. But I think it is reversible. And so I think while the U.S. can probably begin to reduce some troops as the security situation improves, we have to be very careful about pulling out before we have a situation there that is clearly able to be sustained by the local system. And therefore, I would caution against a withdrawal of the United States according to a calendar rather than according to the situation on the ground. In Iran, I think there are two general problems with Iran. The first one is Iran and the region, and the second is Iran and nuclear weapons. Thus far, what we can do or can't do with Iran is, for the United States, pretty much of a mystery, because we have not been prepared to explore with them what the possibilities are. Now, it's difficult to explore with Iran because, in a sense, there are two different structures there. There's the governmental structure, and there is a fundamental power structure, and it depends a lot who you talk to. But setting that aside, it seems to me that making discussions subject to preconditions before you will sit down and talk is not a recipe for understanding or for finding out what goes on. That is one of the purpose of talking, and talking in itself is not necessarily a concession. On Iran and the region, I think we need to know more about what Iran's fundamental designs are. With respect to Iraq, for example, there's no question that they take great comfort from our problems in Iraq, and I think they undoubtedly contribute to those problems. But what do they really want to see? What kind of an Iraq? They were subject to a 7-year war with Iraq, which I'm sure they wouldn't like repeated, and therefore they have concern about a powerful Iraq. Would they rather have an Iraq which splintered into its major constituent parts a Shia state in the south, a Sunni state in the center, and a Kurdish state in the north. From a power position, that might be very attractive to them. But a Kurdish state in the north is no less a problem for the Iranians than it is for the Turks, given the spread of the Turkish population in that region. But we don't know. We don't really know if there's anything here with respect to Iraq that we might be able to work with the Iranians on. Then there's Iraq and nuclear weapons. There's no doubt Iran and nuclear weapons. There's no doubt that Iran considers itself in a difficult region. And I think that a turn to nuclear weapons is in many cases, what appears to be a logical result for countries that live in difficult regions. But it's not that simple. And for the United States and for the rest of the world, it is not just Iran developing the nuclear weapons. It is what that means to the whole nonproliferation regime around the world. Because if Iran is allowed to develop the enrichment of uranium to the point that it can develop a nuclear weapons capability, then it seems to me we have made a very deep hole in the nonproliferation regime. It's difficult for me to see that would not be followed by perhaps Egypt, perhaps Saudi Arabia, perhaps Turkey in the region, and by similar states with similar problems around the world. That is not a better world. What can we do? Again, I think discussion is important. This time, discussion, I think, needs to be preceded by a very careful understanding among the negotiators on this issue, and that is the British, the French, the Germans, the United States, Russia, and China. None of those parties want Iran to develop nuclear weapons, but they all have different sorts of concerns. It seems to me that what we need to do is agree first among those parties. We do not want Iran to develop nuclear weapons. What are the steps that can be taken to avoid that as an outcome? That will take a level of cooperation which so far we haven't really achieved. Will it work? I don't know. But it seems to me that is the approach to take, rather than assuming that Iran cannot be dissuaded and that it is either acquiescence or the use of force. I'll stop there.
Thank you, General Scowcroft. We'll be right back.